Welcome to Central Iowa Today. This is a weekday afternoon public affairs program that we do during the noon hour at 12:45 p.m. here on KFJB. Very special guest today. We have a science author, if you will. His name is George Leopold. He is visiting with us today from the East Coast, and he has written a very, very good book that is the biography of an astronaut. And this book is called Calculated Risk, The Supersonic Life and Times of Gus Grissom, who is a native of Mitchell, Indiana, an alumnus of Purdue University, and is no longer with us. And good afternoon, George. Thanks for spending time with us.
Good to be with you, Chuck. Thank you.
Thanks, George. Hey, a very deep subject, this book. We have seen many biographies of astronauts over the course of time, especially the original seven, and this took you a while to get done. You didn't quit your day job to get this book done, right?
That's right, yeah. It took about 7 years to pull it together, and it was published by Purdue University, Gus's alma mater, back in June. You're right. I mean, the other astronauts, and of course, they were observing the 47th anniversary of the first moon landing. Most of them have written their memoirs. Well, Gus Grissom never got that chance, of course, because he and his crew died almost 50 years ago in a launch pad fire, which we chronicle in the book. He did write about it, a previous program, Gemini, which he was played a key role in, but never got to tell his side of the story, and my intent was to try to fill that gap in the historical record by placing Gus's career and his life in the context of manned spaceflight.
There are many misnomers about Gus, right?
Yes, there certainly are.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Gus died, as you mentioned, in a very horrific tragedy, if I do say so myself. I, upon reading about this tragedy when I was a child, absolutely became traumatized by it. So, and I, over the years, I'm now 56, I've read plenty of material on this subject. But nonetheless, there are many misnomers about Gus, and I guess during the course of this book, did you feel at all like you were a tragedian or anything like that?
I mean, I've written a biography and a tragedy, and it's also a family tragedy. I mean, the families of the crew of Apollo 1 were shattered by this accident. But, you know, my intent was that there had been a few previous biographies, and I argued against the narrative, which was that Gus was always pegged as sort of the lost astronaut or the hard luck astronaut. I argue that he was neither. I argue that Gus knew exactly where he was going and how he would get there. And, you know, of course, this all started with the end of his first flight in July of 1961, which was the flight of Liberty Bell 7, which I document in the book. And, of course, at the end, for your listeners who might have read or seen the movie The Right Stuff, it appears that Gus panicked. Well, he didn't. It simply did not happen the way the book and the movie portrayed it, and I attempt to set the record straight on precisely what did happen.
And I think you did a wonderful job in doing so. The book is an intense ride. I received a review copy, and I really feel it's one of those can't-put-down type of books that come along every so often, if you will. You know, as you approach and you read the aftermath of Liberty Bell 7, you are filled with dread knowing that this poor guy, his capsule is going to sink. And then later, as the book advances on, you know that the three astronauts are going to die. Now, one of the big questions I have, I was filled with feelings during the course of reading the book that you are indicting, the evidence of the fire is an indictment, I believe, of several entities. How much of an indictment is this fire and the tragedy on NASA itself? Can you comment on that?
Sure. I would have to, I judge that NASA was culpable in the deaths of the astronauts. They should have known better. The use of pure oxygen under pressure in a spacecraft the size of, this was called the Block 1 Apollo spacecraft, the early version of the one that flew to the moon. To use pure oxygen under pressure on the pad with about 20 miles of wiring and then sealing three men inside with triple hatches. The inner hatch was less like a cork to maintain the internal pressure. It was just, I mean, anybody who knows anything about hyperbaric environments would tell you that that's not a good thing to do. They should have known it. The contractor, North American Aviation, argued against the use of pure oxygen. They had used a mixed atmosphere, the air, basically the air we breathe, in aircraft like the very successful X-15. But NASA and this, I actually tracked down the change order, and it's footnoted in the book. NASA ordered North American Aviation to install a pure oxygen system in the Apollo 1 command module, and the reason was they were trying to save weight. Weight drove everything. You've got this huge vehicle, 365 feet high, 36 stories high, and they had to cut weight. And one way to cut weight was to use what they called a single gas system, which they figured would save them about 30 pounds of weight. Well, in the end, when the Apollo command module was repaired, they did use a mixed gas system. They put it into a hatch could be opened in 3 seconds, and they protected the wiring and put in floorboards and panel boards and so forth and built this magnificent machine that took 24 human beings to the moon. Well, it wouldn't have happened without the fire, and because the fire happened on the launch pad, they were able to determine the cause and fix the machine.
The story produces a lot of thoughts of what-ifs. One of the what-ifs is, had this fire not occurred, would this, with all the problems in this vehicle, even if the fire had not occurred, do you think it would have been, the thing I think about, would this thing have been launched off the ground?
Yeah, I know. I mean, before his flight, Gus Grissom said, you know, we'll just be happy if we can get back alive. I mean, that's what he thought of the spacecraft. The reporters in Houston thought he was kidding, but he was actually sending a message that he really had a lemon on his hands, and it had fallen to him to try and fix this. I don't think and most senior people at NASA will say this as well. We probably would not have gotten to the moon by the end of the decade, as President Kennedy declared, without the fire. I mean, that's this great paradox that if this hadn't happened, we probably wouldn't have made it. Maybe we would have gotten to the moon eventually, but you know, we had publicly declared in 1961 we were going to get there before the end of the decade and do it before the Russians.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, there are a number of scenarios like that. The other one being, you know, would Gus Grissom have walked on the moon? Would he have been the first? Well, you can't. He had a ticket. He probably was in line to walk on the moon. He could have been the first, but a lot of things would have to, you know, unfold in the correct order. And actually, the crew of Apollo 11 sort of, they happened to be in the right place at the right time in a complex crew rotation to where they would try the first attempt, and they succeeded.
Yeah.
But all of these guys stood on the shoulders of Gus Grissom.
Yeah.
That was, my intent was to make that clear in the historical record. This couldn't have been done without Gus's sacrifice.
Gus Grissom was every man, wasn't he?
Yeah, he really was. I mean, he was the pilot's pilot. He was the test pilot's test pilot. Nobody, by 1966, when he's up against trying to fix this death trap of a spacecraft, no one dared cross him on a technical question. If Gus Grissom wanted something, he got it, because he was at the top of this right stuff pyramid of test pilots. In 18 months, he got the maiden flight of two different spacecraft, Apollo, and before that, the two-man Gemini spacecraft. It's very rare for a test pilot to get even one. He got two in 18 months. He was at the top of his profession. He was in line to go to the moon, and, you know, had things worked out, he could have been the first. Today we could be marking, you know, the fact that Gus Grissom was the first man on the moon. Instead, it was his friend and fellow Purdue alumni, Neil Armstrong.
So far, have you had good response to the book?
Very gratifying, Chuck. I was reviewed last weekend in the Wall Street Journal, and they praised it. So that's very gratifying. To sit and stare at something for 7 years, not knowing what, if it's any good, if it's, you know, if people are going to respond to it, if I've accomplished my goal of putting Gus's career in context, to get that kind of praise is very gratifying for a writer.
Yeah, no doubt about it. No doubt about it. Any advice on getting a copy of the book, just from a basic standpoint for us?
Yeah, you can easily find it at Purdue University Press's website. Just search there. The easiest thing is to buy it online. It's also available, of course, on Amazon, and I think probably some other online sites. I know it's available around the D.C., Washington, D.C. area where I am, at Barnes & Noble, and I think it's available at the Air and Space Museum if any of your listeners get to come to D.C. In fact, I'll be signing downtown at the Air and Space Museum in a couple of weeks, so looking forward to that.
Yeah. Do you still hold a childlike fascination or a grandiose notion of spaceflight?
Well, you know, I think I'm like you and many of us in our generation. I was really inspired by this, and I would argue that this was one of the great technological achievements of certainly of the 21st century, and definitely the history of the Cold War. Neil Armstrong said he was always struck by the fact that how many people would come up to him and tell him how what he had done had inspired them. And I think, you know, it helped create a whole generation of people who want to innovate and keep the country moving forward. So, yeah, this was something that captured my imagination from the earliest days. I'm old enough to vaguely remember those first early Mercury flights. I can remember where I was during the Apollo 11 moon landing. I can remember my father waking me up during the Apollo 13 accident and letting me come down to watch the initial reports about what was going on and whether these guys would come back. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, you know, and the other thing, Chuck, is that, you know, you could make an argument that Yeah, that you could, we could have spent that $25 billion it cost to go to the moon on other things like, you know, we're eliminating poverty and ignorance, but it's not clear that we would have done that. So as it turns out, we had to go to the moon to appreciate what we have here on Earth.
Oh.
And I think that makes it worth it.
Yeah. The title of this book is Calculated Risk, The Supersonic Life and Times of Gus Grissom. It's got a great picture of Gus on the cover in his Mercury space outfit, as well, as far as I'm concerned, as well it should be. And Gus was a hero. He was every man. Mitchell, South Dakota.
Indiana.
I'm sorry, yeah. There's a Mitchell, Indiana, and a Mitchell, South Dakota. Sorry about that, Chief.
The Hoosiers would not be pleased.
No, they would not. George Leopold, on that humorous note, thank you for your time this day.
It was a pleasure, Chuck. Thanks.
All right. George Leopold guesting with us this day on this edition of Central Iowa Today from News Talk 1230 KFJB, Marshalltown, Iowa.